Okay, today is the 15th of June. It's the day after my wife's birthday. And tomorrow is our anniversary. But anyway, it's 2018, June 15th. And I'm talking to Jay Wickham. And Jay, what year did you graduate from WD?
Good morning, Bob. I graduated in 1984. So I was in the class of 84 and started my kindergarten career sometime before that. We'd have to roll back a few years, but I think it might have been 1971.
Okay. You went to starting out your elementary experiences in Epworth Elementary. Is that what it was?
Yeah, so we were raised in Epworth, big white house on the top of the hill.
Yep.
Close to the border of the city, so my backyard was beautiful farm yards and rolling hills and streams. The front yard was the city of Epworth, which was awesome. And so for kindergarten and first grade, we went to Epworth Elementary. And so my brother, who was 2 years older than I was, actually went to kindergarten in Dyersville.
John did.
And so if you kind of remember the difficulties in WD as far as arranging classrooms and teachers, and so it was kind of odd that he would be bused, you know, 15, 20 miles away just for kindergarten. But I was fortunate that we were able to walk. We did every other day kindergarten. And Mrs. Notterman was my kindergarten teacher. And it was great. You had naps and you got to play and learn stuff. And it was a good start. And then a very influential teacher for me in first grade was Geraldine McCarthy. And she was a longtime teacher and was the principal, I believe, for that building as well. And she was just very memorable because she was a good teacher. She was a good motivator. She helped us, you know, basically create the foundations of reading. And she occasionally would be gone one day for maybe some of the principal duties. And then as a reward, we would go out and we'd sit out underneath the oak tree and she'd read us a book.
Oh, awesome.
At the end of the year. Yeah. And so I think one of the only teachers that ever did that. And so she had the command of the class to be able to get us out to the yard and to be able to read to us. And I think another memory I had related to her was we had something to do with the alphabet and before and after, you know, and so, you know, B is before or after D. And I had trouble comprehending that. And I remember I was frustrated. And she said, "Don't worry about it. You'll get it next year. Don't worry about it. You know, have a good summer." And it was real good. And the other thing she did is the first time I voted. It was 1972. And don't quote me on the election results, but I believe Nixon carried our class over McGovern pretty well.
Okay.
Because most kids in first grade, they only knew the president. And so it was President Nixon. So, but she had an election that we had in November, and we were able to vote and did fun things like that as well. So from there, we went to St. Patrick's. And I don't know if it was in place or not, but the Share Time program.
Yeah.
And so we basically did second, third, and fourth grade, half between St. Patrick's and Epworth, and half in Piosta Pleasant Grove, which was the public school. And the public school was actually held at the Catholic Church, which was kind of weird today to think about it, but it was just normal for us. And so we'd arrive every day at St. Patrick's and we'd go to church, and then we'd have the morning in St. Patrick's School, and so it was very much a Catholic education, and had nuns that were our teachers through second, third, fourth grade, and then we'd have lunch in the church basement, and then we'd get on the bus, and we'd drive to Pleasant Grove.
You went to Pleasant Grove?
Every day, to Placid Pleasant Grove, and so I remember those bumpy rides and over the creek, and we have great bus drivers, and Ellen, I'm trying to think of Ellen's last name. But she was our legendary bus driver, and she would say, I think that might have been it. She would sing songs with us, and we'd have fun. And then if you could get in the way back of the bus, right before you went over this one bridge, you'd start bouncing, because then you'd get this big bounce, and the bus would go off. Here comes the bounce. And so we had a great time in the bus, and I remember being hot, and I remember being cold, and I remember occasionally Tom Byer and Bob Pierce getting in trouble and have to sitting up in front and assign seats and all that good stuff. Well, we arrived at Pleasant Grove, and then the other class, the morning class that was in Pleasant Grove or Placid, would get on the bus. We'd get off the bus. They'd be waiting. They'd get on the bus. We'd give each other kind of high fives in the 70s as we went and usually goof around and talk to them. And then they'd say, get going. And then they'd get on the bus and go to Epworth. And so it was half shared time. You'd flip morning and afternoon each every day. It was a very inefficient program, but memorable. And then we would have classes in second, third, and fourth grade. And I remember Mrs. Malloy, can't remember her first name, but she was an excellent teacher that was there. I think she taught fourth grade. And just a good experience, you know, getting some of the foundations of education. I was never the best reader and had the difficulty in English, and so that kind of set me back. But we had great fun. And then I went fifth grade 100% at St. Patrick's because they didn't have shared time for some reason. I don't know why they stopped at fifth grade. Maybe and some of my classmates went to Farley, and then I joined Farley in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. Okay. That was my dad's school in Farley. And I think you were there some of the time as well. And then kind of you and I followed each other to
yeah, we did.
To that. But that was kind of the early elementary part. And the fifth grade, so my first male teacher ever was in fifth grade.
Okay.
And that broke a streak of, you know, 3+ years of Catholic education related to having a nun that would teach. But fifth grade was Walter Drozdel. He was a great teacher, and he was the first male teacher I ever had. And he did a lot of good things, intramurals. We had student elections. We had a little school play. He read books to us over lunch. Gave us a lot of freedom. It was fun.
That was fifth grade?
That was fifth grade in Epworth.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was my last year as part of St. Patrick's. And then from there on, it was Western Dubuque.
Okay. So then it was on to Farley.
Yeah. Yeah, Farley. So you were you the principal in Farley in roughly 77, 78, somewhere in the neighborhood?
I just came in 77. I was with Tom, and he was principal. I was assistant principal for, I think, 2 years. But then Ralph Buckman retired, and that's when I went to Epworth.
You went to the high school.
To the high school as assistant principal. Harold came in as principal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I do remember that because that was kind of my senior year. And so when we went to Farley in sixth grade, I had... I grew up in that school. That was my dad's school. So dad, when we were little in Bartlett, he would go to work on Saturdays. And then, you know, I'm sure mom was like, well, why don't you take as many kids as you can? Because by that time, I think we might have 8 already. And so 8 kids. And so 4 of us, sometimes Lynn, Sally, John, and me, and sometimes I was the oldest, and TJ, Matt, and that would go with us. And then we would go either into the kindergarten room and play, or we'd go in the gym. And we'd swing on the rope, and we'd play basketball.
This is all unsupervised, right?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. So Dad would just be in there, and he would be working. And, you know, he had all these keys, and sometimes he'd give us the keys to try to get into the kindergarten room. And, you know, you've got this ring of 60 keys, and you're trying to figure out which ones work. And he'd tell you, and then you'd forget by the time you got there, and we'd have to walk back.
Oh, yeah.
And so we grew up in the elementary school. We used to take those little scooters, those wood scooters they had.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
And we would take those up on the near the band room, and it was the old building to the new building, and basically it was a higher elevation.
A little elevated.
Yeah, so ramp there.
Ramp, yes.
So we'd open the doors at the bottom, and we'd start at the top, and we'd push each other, and we'd roll all the way through. The problem was there was a divider between the two doors.
It closed.
So you had to get hit one of those shoes, left or right. And if you didn't, you were like, boom. And so we had great fun at that school and just, you know, helping out. So I was very comfortable when we went to 6th, 7th, 8th grade at the junior high. And that was a big school, K through 8. And I think my dad said there was over 1,000 students there. You know, it's the only experience you knew, you're like, fine. But coming from St. Patrick's, where there wasn't, you know, wasn't 200 students in the whole school, mm-hmm. to coming to 1,000 was quite an experience. But we were out in the portables in sixth grade, And we have that, you know, joint teaching as well. And so your main classroom would be, I have Mrs. Ungs and then Mr. Brown. And they were great. And then Jane Harrington and there was another teacher, I can't remember who was on the other side. And we're out in the portables.
Yep.
And we kind of liked it because you're just a rambunctious sixth grader. And you'd have the whole room, and then you'd go into gym and art and music. You'd walk through the hallways and have all sorts of fun doing that. One memory I had is that when we go from the portables into like music class and into gym, generally we're unsupervised. The teacher didn't always, because sometimes they'd stay back and do a special reading class or things. And so we're supposed to, in an orderly manner, get from the portable to report to the music hall, which was a good jaunt, you know, all the way through the hallways. And so one day we had the idea, and there's a bunch of us boys, and we're like, hey, that video vending machine there, you know, and I wonder if we shook that enough, if we can get some of that candy out of there.
Okay.
We're unsupervised in the hall, and so sure enough, I was kind of the ringleader. We got a bunch of guys, and I got some of the strong kids in the class, Jerry Klosterman and Mike Vasky and a few others, Jeff Raker, and I'm like, shake this thing here, we'll get the candy, and we'll share it. And so they would shake that, and then candy would come out, and we'd grab the candy, and all run, and we'd divvy it up before we got into class. And so we did that for a series of times, seems like weeks, might have been just one or two times. And then Mrs. Ung said, it's come to my attention that somebody's been stealing from the vending machines. Whoever's part of this, you need to get up and go to the principal's office right now. And so every boy in the sixth grade class got up and marched to my dad's office. And I remember one of the students on the way, I think it was Craig Breitbach, goes, yeah, I know, my dad would be really mad if he knew I was doing this, but your dad's going to find out really soon. And so my father, as the principal, handled it well, and basically, you know, I forgot we got some sort of probation, and then we all had to pay back the amount of candy that we had heisted from the vending machine. So it was good, and so that was fun. Outdoor education was tremendous.
Oh yeah, good stuff.
At Little Club. Were you ever a counselor there?
No, I would come up during the day, I think, for a while, and then go back, and I never stayed overnight or anything.
Yeah, so that was fun. We did that both in sixth grade. And then in eighth grade, we had outdoor winter education out there at Camp Little Top.
Okay.
It was tremendous. And so it was really a good time. I mean, you learn new things. You know, we'd go fishing, we'd go hiking, and, you know, you had a camp buddy and a tent buddy that was with you. And, you know, you're at the time where you're chasing girls and punching them on the arms. And, you know, that was your sign of affection back then. But it was a good time to bond with your classmates. I remember having a lot of fun with some of my classmates and outside of the classroom. Was really a good time. Another very memorable teacher at the junior high was Kevin O'Neill, Coach O'Neill.
Yep.
And so, you know, keep in mind, me, along with many of the other people that came from the parochial system, didn't really have strong male figures. You know, my first teacher was a fifth grade teacher, was a male teacher. That was the first male teacher I ever had. And then Coach O'Neill in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade was this guy. And he actually, I think in the end, wasn't really tall, but he just seemed like he was young and muscular.
Yeah.
And, you know,
deep voice,
reminded us of Superman. And just ate up gym class and ate up confidence and, you know, and loved games. And so he would just be all jacked up during gym class. And then we'd have intramurals. Did you ever play any of the intramurals teams?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we were all a little younger back then, but he'd have intramural floor hockey and we'd have outdoor softball. And then we'd have wiffle ball inside. We had badminton. And I think we even had bowling. We went over to Farley bowling as well. So it was great fun. And they were co-ed too.
Yeah.
So boys and girls. So it was wonderful. And usually we have like one or two teachers or staff on each team.
Sure.
And he gave ribbons away. And I just remember it being the funnest time because we didn't have organized sports until seventh grade.
Right.
Seventh and eighth grade was the first time you'd be on an organized team. And so that intramural time was just wonderful. And he was a disciplinarian. So if you crossed his path, he'd get all jacked up and you'd hear that deep voice and it'd scare the heck out of you. But he did a real good job including others and uplifting kids that weren't really good athletes. One, my brother, DJ, who was, he was I weighed like 72 pounds in sixth grade. He probably weighed 50 pounds. So I, and my brother Matt, who was like normal looking, we called him Fat Matt. Because compared to TJ and I, he was like a heavyweight. I'm sure there wasn't an ounce of fat on you in junior high. But Kevin Lee was good, and he would, I remember some of the kids that were from farm communities didn't have as much experience with balls and playing and organized, and he would always include them and find a special place for them. And so whether it be the goalie, if you're big, just blocking things, and I remember we'd do flag football, and supposed to be flag football, and then we were just kids and kind of rough, and he said, like, for the fourth quarter, he said, it's tackle. Just, it's tackle. And he did that because he had this, and I think it's a Colander kid. I can't remember his first name. I can't remember what the first name was. But it was.
I remember those guys. Yeah.
And he was short and stout, and he wanted Colander to score a touchdown because he was trying to build his confidence up. And so he allowed us to go football. I knew I was the quarterback. And so then we called the play, and it was Colander right up the middle. And so we handed the ball off to him, and he just plowed through everybody, and he scored a touchdown. I mean, it was exciting. It was just during his gym class. And so it was that kind of environment that he created that was just made it fun and, was good. And Gay Wilker was equally as good a teacher on the women's side. And they were just really into athletic sports and fitness, probably ahead of their time.
Probably they were, yeah. You're right.
Just that. And they, the other part related to junior high, I remember, was the new arrival of the special ed ward. And you might know why that happened. Well, they created a wing for just special ed sometime in the late 70s.
That was really the development of that aspect of special ed as apart from the mainstream. Because before that, there really wasn't anything as far as a separate division specifically for those kids.
Okay.
So that's interesting because over the course of time, the philosophy was inclusion into the mainstream classes, and then it was separate away.
back to inclusion.
I'm not sure where we're at now, but anyway.
So they built that new wing. The beginning of our sixth and seventh class. So we were the last week we were able to move our books out of the portable in sixth grade into this new wing that they built in Farley. And that was going to house one some special ed classes and other ones. So we got to be familiar with some of the special ed students. Keith Dykemeyer comes to mind, and there's probably a few others.
Yeah.
And we would include them in our gym class, and we would have all types of fun things we do with them. I remember Coach O'Neill congratulated our class on that. I remember he was like, hey, what you did is important, getting everyone to be included, and you're really helping lift people's spirits. And I remember him telling us that, and thought, we just did it because we did it. It was kind of nice to be kids together. But he had called that out. The other thing was memorable for me was probably our junior high and coaches, the wild and crazy ones. I'm sure as an administrator, I might give you a few gray hairs, but Chops Healy and Bill Betts, kind of mine. So they were just like Saturday Night Live cartoon guys.
Yeah, they were totally, yeah.
We would have them, and he would just be, singing songs. And then, we barely knew Saturday Night Live because it was on Saturday night at 10:30. And, seventh grade, you occasionally watch it, but you're busy or you just, we fall asleep. And he would go into those characters, cheeseburger, 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 when he'd walk us down to lunch. And he would talk about, Jane Curtin, you and you,
you incredible slut, you.
Half the time I didn't even know what he was talking about. But he was always like in character and, you know, making up jokes. And then Chops Healy was quite funny as well.
See, Chops, when I was at St. Joe's as a teacher coach, Chops was my student teacher. That was where he got his teaching experience under me.
Oh, really? So you gave him his comic relief, right? So anyway, were you a history teacher or what? Okay, because that's what he taught.
He was assigned from Lawrence to come out to St. Joe's. And okay, so he came out and he sat in the back and observed, you know, when I had my classes. And so it was his turn, his time to do his thing up front, you know, to take over the class. And so I'm sitting back there and he's going through the lecture, and he was standing in front of the board writing stuff, and eventually he kind of came around the desk and sat, propped himself up against the desk, and finished the class that way. And so the bell rings and the kids leave, and we talk, and he says, you remember when I was up there and I came around and I sat? He says, that was because my pants was falling down. So, anyway, he was my teacher. I was his supervising teacher. So, but you know, when Bill Betts retired, he was so talented, so gifted. I got him at the high school to start our morning video announcements.
Oh, okay.
He was a natural.
Yeah.
And he'd have kids come in, and we'd have the announcements, and he'd have them up there, show them how to be in front of the camera, mm-hmm. and do live announcements on the TV system. And he'd have his characters all the time, you know, and he would interject. It was awesome.
Yeah, maybe you remember this too, and this would have been earlier, before maybe in Ron Junior High, or before the variety show.
Oh yeah,
that the administrators and teachers put on. The Booster Club did that.
Yeah.
I remember that just being hilarious as well. I don't know, you know, I'm sure you had a role as well, but I remember my dad. They talked him into riding a donkey in the high school stage, across the stage, singing "Rhinestone Cowboy." Glenn Campbell, I'm a rhinestone cowboy, and I think my dad's legs were so long on the donkey that he could not stand up and straddle the little donkey.
Oh God!
And you know, that's the type of, you know, it was a different era, a small time thing, you know, for people listening to this, and you know, it was before the internet, before we had cable.
No cable TV.
And you know, all the roads were 2-lane highways to get to Dubuque, so it would take you 45 minutes or half hour to get to Dubuque.
Yeah.
And you know, it was a different era, and so those variety shows were awesome. I remember they had a door prize. And it was a door. You know, so, you know, that joke was, I thought it was funny the first time I ever saw it. But, I mean, nobody even does that anymore. They don't even try that type of corny humor.
This is your first, at junior high, your first exposure to organized sports, right? You remember some
memories
of your coaches then?
So 7th and 8th grade. And so I was active, so he did just about everything with the exception of wrestling. But we were flag football, and you know, like between tackle and flag, I'm trying to try to get them all straight. But you know, Graydon Grimm, and we had was there Mr. Wolf, some
Jack Wolf.
So Mr. Grimm Wolf, Coach O'Neill was 8th grade, and I think he went to freshman year when I was in 8th grade, so we didn't have him. I'm trying to think of as Mr. Ross.
Oh yeah.
Before it was when he eventually became head coach. So Coach Ross was one of our coaches as well.
Okay.
And that was for 7th and 8th grade. And I played both of those. I think I was better at flag football than tackle football. I keep my own way to 80 pounds by then. But they were organized, and then basketball was real fun, and that was basically Healy and Betts.
Yeah.
Well, Betts actually was on the girls' side. He might have done boys too, because they were a different season. So I think those two are those were our two coaches, and then we had Coach Z Ziegelmeier be in there. And
yeah,
I'm not sure if he really knew what basketball was, but but he was a good, strong assistant, and you know, I sort of line us up for free throws. But they were great because they would also make it fun, and so we'd have seventh and eighth grade combined, and then we'd have free throw contests, and whoever got the most free throws, you know, they'd get a pop from the teacher's lounge. And, you know, and Betts and Healy just broke all the rules, I'm sure. So they would just, we'll just go in the teacher's lounge, just go get it. It's right in the fridge or whatever, you know. I'm sure he'd send us in there and we'd grab a pop out of the fridge. It probably was some other teacher. And so we were just being normally. And I was used to going into the teacher's lounge because that's one of the other places we go when we goofed around in junior high.
Okay.
When we were kids. Because we knew that's where the candy and the pop was, and no other teachers were there on Saturday, usually. And so we'd have great fun, but they were good coaches and made our bus trips into Dubuque quite memorable. And they always, our big rivalry was Beckman, for some reason. They were like, Beckman! And then sometimes Cascade. They got like Cascade's number two. Sorry, it's Western Dubuque Cascade people. And we'd have fun playing Beckman and Cascade, and then we sometimes play the Church League. We'd play St. Joe's and Leo and a few others that were there, and then we'd do your Washington and Jefferson in Dubuque and then junior highs.
See, I was athletic director at that point for the junior high.
Oh, okay.
I would meet, you know, with the other ADs and they'd get the schedules. And anyway, the main problem I had when you guys would be sent into Dubuque and they'd be assigned a bus and a driver, well, a lot of these drivers didn't know where the hell. How the hell to get to Jefferson?
And Jefferson was a little tough on the other day.
How do we get there? Anyway, that was nice and obviously.
Yeah, well, no, and then, you know, back then you had to find a map, and there wasn't really good maps in the city of Dubuque, unless you took in the phone book or something. No internet, no nothing. But yeah, we just enjoyed those, and then many times the coaches would stop off, and we'd stop at McDonald's. You know, lucky you had $2 or $3, and if not, they would spot you. And we had all sorts of fun like that. And then I would, I wasn't a good wrestler, so I didn't go up wrestling. So then I did stats for the girls' basketball team.
Okay.
And that's when Betts was the coach. And I remember Cindy Kelly and Penny Hoffman were kind of the two best scorers. I remember I was keeping track and of some of their numbers and stats, and Betts and I were the only guys on the team, and so we would always sit up in the front, and he'd go over and go, okay, Rick, tell me about stats, how about you, who's leading scorer, who's the most rebounds, and so it's that great, you know, just commitment, because I'm sure it's like, you know, it's a junior high game, you know, it probably was 34 to, you know, 28, not a lot of scoring, but he you swear it was like, you know, game 7 of the NBA Finals that he was analyzing and trying to go over. But we had a lot of fun like that, and a lot of the track meets were ice cold and windy and rainy.
Yeah, that was miserable.
Yeah, and we never had any facilities, so then we would run around the front of the school because we didn't have a track in Farley.
Right.
And so somebody said, well, let's use the front where all the bus lanes are and stuff. And so they got the spray paint out, and somebody measured it, and you have the 100-yard dash, and we'd basically be on where the buses and the roads would. And, you know, back then, you know, it was a real good organization, so a mom would come to pick up a kid, and they'd be driving, and we'd be running, we'd have to get off the road. But that was kind of some fun track stuff, but everybody loved the big pits. And I was a high jumper, and so you'd jump on the pits, and you'd take that swing, that rope you'd go through and jump. But good teachers, and you know, that was my first exposure to multiple classes when we went to 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, so we had an actual, you know,
schedule.
And it was real good, and all the teachers were good at what they did. Some were meaner than others. I remember the art teacher, I'm trying to think of her name.
What's his Ruth Kelker.
Ruth Kelker.
She was notorious.
And God bless the woman. And, you know, I'm sure her grandkids would tell her this too, but she reminded me of a character from, you know, the Grimm novels. I swear she was like 6'8",
yeah.
300 pounds. She had the biggest arms and legs you ever saw. And she had this face that was huge and this nose. And she had a huge wart off the end of her nose. And you would forget all that if she was a great art teacher. But she would strike the fear of a god in every one of us. If you couldn't draw straight, if you weren't creative, she would just be breathing on the back of your neck, telling you how bad your art was. And, you know, we couldn't sit still as it is. And so we'd be bouncing around the room, and she'd kick kids out left and right,
yeah,
and then make them come back, and she'd take their art projects and throw it in the garbage. It was just one of these things to this day. That's why I haven't picked up a crayon since. And so there was your good moments and your bad moments. I'm sure as administrator, those are your people. You probably go in and say, oh, Mrs. Cowper, you can't be sending 80 of your students to the principal's office every day.
Again.
But it was good structure and fun. We had the wing in 7th and 8th grade, and I was fortunate enough to be 8th grade class president, so I was very excited about that. And I remember my dad announcing the results over the intercom, and that was a special moment. And you guys used to do that. You'd have the announcements at the end of the day, and you probably did them a few times, and my dad did them a lot. And he'd come and go, well, then there's a good show on PBS at 7 o'clock on, you know, the Cardinals 1968 World Series. You're going to tune in on that one. And he would, like, have some of these reminders about what to watch on TV. And so I think it was time to become the broadcaster. But buses was a big deal, too. So then we'd get on and off the bus. I lived in Atworth, and I was bused all the way to Farley for school. And so for most WD students, being on a bus was a big part of their life.
Way of life, yeah.
And you couldn't, even if you lived in Atworth that had elementary schools and high schools, you had to go to the middle school in Farley. So I don't think there would be any students in the public school system that would get out of the bus. Just you couldn't. So you had, there was no one town that had everything.
Well, imagine if you lived up north of Luxembourg. What time you would have to get on the bus to come to?
Yeah, it would be quite early.
It was like before 7 o'clock in the morning, obviously.
Yeah, so the buses were a big thing too, and so you just remember being cold, hot, and you know most of the bus drivers and things were safe and reliable, but a lot of them were cranky too. And they realized that, you know, in order to get from A to B, they needed some law and order. So more than once, I had a bus driver pull over, turn around, and then just scary as half, like, sit in your seats, I'm telling you, there's one more kid that does this, we're gonna have this happen. And you'd be like, okay, and then
that was always what I dreaded, was the bus radio, when I would hear some bus driver would say, please meet me outside when I arrive. I knew it wasn't gonna be good.
Yeah, so that was, you know, a lot of your life is, remember, on the bus. And then, you know, the road to the junior high was still gravel.
Right.
And you just have, some of these buses, they run gravel roads half the time. They're just full of dust. And then you'd hit those potholes and you'd bum, 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 bum. And the seats back then, they were just, like, hard as rock. Yeah. Now, later on, they got a little softer. But early on, I swear they were made of plastic. But,
okay, so now
they were hard.
Now you're transitioning into high school, James. Mm-hmm. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so high school. So, you know, that was good for me because I was from Atworth. And so, you know, I was able to walk to school or take a real short car ride to high school. And we were the first class in junior high in 1980, roughly. Been 79 when we arrived. But 1980 to have all four classes at the high school. Previously, the freshman class went to the Farley Annex at St. Joe's, just for crowding. I don't know what happened, but we were all flung there. So I remember my first day, now in high school, and I've been to high school a bunch of times with watching games and sports and basketball and wrestling, because we hung out in the gyms and Dad would take us. But we got there, and the hallways were just packed. I don't even remember that. It was shoulder to shoulder that first year. Upwards. And I remember the seniors were like, get these freshmen out of here. Why is it so packed? Because, you know, now you've got another 200 and some students.
Right.
Maybe, you know, that maybe even more. Yeah, 250 students that were at the school every day versus being at the annex.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, then the other deal was initially when the school year would start, the freshmen would be terrified because they couldn't remember their locker combinations. Remember that?
Yeah, we were fortunate that in junior high we had locker combinations. So from 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, we didn't have lockers, but 7th and 8th grade we had lockers. So we kind of got a little familiar with that. But if you came from Leo or one of the Catholic schools,
you
weren't experienced lockers, and you didn't have the structure. And I'm sure coming from some of those small parochial schools, we might have 20 plus in your class. Now all of a sudden you've got roughly 1,000 kids, maybe a little less. High school was quite daunting. But freshman year was good. You're now kind of going from the student class president in 8th grade, king of the hill, your dad's an administrator, and then all of a sudden you're thrown into there. And I remember one of the teachers said, go into the teacher's lounge and get me this. And, you know, maybe it was Coach Dan or somebody, just go help me. And so I went in the teacher's lounge in high school to get this. And I got my butt chewed from, I think it was Jimmy Nelson. He was a band teacher. He never liked me.
Oh, sure.
Well, there you go. And so we went in there. He goes, this isn't your dad's school anymore. You can't just come into here. This is teacher space. And I was like, hey, I'm just supposed to get this ream of paper or something for, you know, Mr. Dan. Or anyway, freshman year was good. We had, Coach Danner, and now we're kind of in the whole throngs of all the high school, and our class was really excited. I loved homecoming. It was just so much fun, and it was still, you know, I think that era was still more like the 70s and just close-knit, and everything that happened at the high school, the whole life revolved around the high school, and so homecoming and the building of floats, and we had a freshman float, and you know, you had different dances, and so your whole life was around that. At the same time, you know, you kind of had some classes that might have been a little tougher, and I remember my worst grade in all of high school came my freshman year from Coach Danner, who was my 8th grade football, my 9th grade football coach that fall, and then I had life sciences or something. And maybe he was trying to send me a message that you can do better, and you're not just going to skate along. You're in high school. We had a real good freshman class and fun. We were in the freshman basketball league, and so we'd play all the Dubuque schools. So you'd play, Waller, Hempstead, and Senior, and they'd have, like, Waller Gold, Waller Blue, and Senior this and that. And so that was great competition that you were, you know, enjoying. Kind of first time these different high school kids that were all brought together from various elementary schools.
Who's your freshman basketball coach? Is that Coach
Gerber? Coach Gerber. And so in that era, we basically had one gym in Epworth. That was at the high school.
Yep.
One. The Cracker Box was still around, and that was the elementary school. And I think it was all of 50 feet. And so in today's world, like Steph Curry would basically grab a rebound and shoot because that would be 3-point range. It was basically the Hoosiers gym, and the walls were 6 inches away from the out-of-bounds line. But yeah, the only full gym we had is at the high school. And so you can imagine you've got varsity, you got junior varsity, you got sophomore team, you got freshman team. So what we had to do is we would practice at the Vineyard Seminary. So you were fortunate enough to create an agreement with Divine Word to allow the freshmen and the sophomores to coach or to practice over there. So we would have time. Sometimes you get a bus. Sometimes you trudge through the snow and up the hill from Western Dubuque High School to the seminary, and we'd take shortcuts through there because we were from Epworth. And that was a college court.
Right.
That court was long.
Yep.
And so, oh my God, I remember going back and forth and up and down there and then just doing conditioning drills. It's like, oh my God, this is a long court. But Coach Gerber was our coach, and Coach Schramm, I think, was the sophomore coach.
Yeah.
And, the team ahead of us was really good. They were loaded with talent with Doug Lampy and Jay Steffen and Dennis Bradley and, Mike Buffelli. They were good. They were solid, and we were a developing team, and so we'd have to scrimmage against them too, and they just pounded us. And it was a long court too. And Gerber was creative. He liked Bobby Knight, And, he was always working on the big men, and he would, I don't know if he was off his medications or what, but he would be on Jerry Closer.
What are you talking, about?
Coach Gerber.
Oh, Gerber.
And so he would get all jacked up, and he would inspire us to like, hey, you can dunk it, you can do it. You know, if only Coach ever said it, I'm like, yeah. And so we'd try to, he'd sometimes do layup drills and try to have everybody try to dunk it. And some of them couldn't even hit the bottom of the net. And, you know, some of the bigger guys, Jerry Closerman and Kevin Connery and Chris Dane was a good jumper. We'd get up there and touch the rim and stuff. And so he'd really inspire it to us. But other times, he'd be working the big guys. And Jerry would get the ball. He'd travel and he'd swing his elbows. And then some little guys would knock the ball away. I remember one time he was on the gym floor. And he just put his back and he pedaled his feet in the air and his arms. And he's like, Jerry, don't bring the ball down. You're the biggest guy on the court. Just catch it and throw it back up there. I don't even care if it hits anything, but don't bring the ball down and travel.
Oh,
and he would just scream and yell. And so we were kind of away from everybody. And we had a good time there. And I remember what we'd do after practice. We would, and we weren't supposed to, we'd check the door. And we were from Epworth. The swimming pool was open. And if the door was open, we'd all like, yeah, cannonball. We'd just dive off the board and just be making huge splashes trying to.
That pool was never heated, was it?
No. So it was probably nice and cool. Yeah, it was the heating plus extra. And so that was where all our practices were. And we didn't have games. We had games at the seminary, full-time games. And then we'd have some games at the Cracker Box.
Oh, God.
And then we'd have some freshman games at the junior high. And then occasionally we'd be at the high school.
Yeah.
So we played all over our freshman and sophomore year. Then you kind of follow the schedule of varsity. But, you know, contrast that today where they've got multiple gyms.
I go over there and walk through and I think, oh, my God. My only thought is that we must have made those kids back then tougher because they had to put up with, we didn't have facilities.
We had early practices. We'd have practice before school sometimes. And so, you'd have to get there, at 7 in the morning and you'd have practice. And then, you were basically by 10:30, you're about ready to take a nap. you had to do everything. But now they have, quite a few facilities. They got a full court gym at the elementary school, and they've got multiple gyms at the high school as well. And so, the facilities, that's probably the biggest thing, the biggest improvement is in the capital facilities for, one, the classroom spaces, the auditorium, and then the gym.
Yeah.
And we really had none of those. We had portables. I probably spent a third of my class time in portables. A third. I'm probably not exaggerating. Maybe even more. I mean, all of sixth grade, I was in a portable every day, all day, almost, with the other section of gym and in music. That's all gone. And we didn't have an auditorium. The gym was the auditorium. And so all the plays and all of the assemblies were in the gym. And,
How about some of the memorable teachers you had at the high school?
Loaded with it. And I think, one of the comments I made a few years back when we were talking about some of the Wickham Service Award was that the teachers were kind of the greatest generation.
Yeah.
Tom Brokaw labeled that with the World War II group. And I think some of our teachers were part of that greatest generation that you and my father and others were part, that your life and your profession revolved around the school. And the concept of leaving wasn't in your mind. Yeah, you got into the profession at age 23, and then you got out at 63,
yeah.
And you put in that 35, 40 years, and so the last of those at West Dubuque High School is Tom Dan, who's retiring this year, and so he was my teacher and my three kids' teachers as well,
right.
And so that's special, and so he's just going. He was a phenomenal. Is a phenomenal teacher, coacher, and an inspirational person. And he was really good. I had accounting. Mrs. Callahan was a great accounting teacher. And, today that's probably one of the classes that really has helped me in business and was some of the foundations of, keeping track of expenses and income and things like debits and credits and stupid stuff like that, but just balance sheets and profits. And then eventually I went to UNI and had more advanced accounting classes. And so really enjoyed that class. Creatively, Tom Beery was, I'm kind of a freedom guy. Some people would say borderline libertarian. So, you know, have fun, get out there. I'm not a big rules person. Tom Beery would be very creative. And he would say, go take pictures. And he'd say, if I get another picture of a locker sign, you're taking a picture of a static locker sign, I'm going to throw up all over it. And then you're going to spend the rest of the day to throw up, like, in this classroom. And so go get me pictures of people. Get me pictures of scenarios, sunsets, things that move you. And he inspired you to go out there and do that in photography class.
I got to tell you, okay, this happened Tuesday evening. I went over to Farley at the baseball game, watching the Bobcats play Bettendorf. I go back to the lunch stand, and here's Mike Leifried. And so we visit. So anyway, I don't know how it came about, but Mike was recounting Mr. Beery's class that he was in. I think he was a senior. And he had to go out and take, how he told you to go out and take pictures of scenes and people. And well, he had to do this type of person, this type of person. But he had to take pictures of some kids. Well, Mike didn't quite get finished. And he said, I came to school in the morning and I was late, but I knew I didn't have a picture of kids. So he went up to Epworth Elementary and was standing there outside of his car taking pictures of kids.
Okay.
Well, this teacher saw him taking pictures. And so with that, later on transitioned to the Dubuque Sheriff's car showing up at the high school. And wondering about why this kid was taking pictures of these little kids. So that was BJ's experience of Mr. Beery's class.
So those were some of the fun free ones. I remember my sophomore year in biology, Mr. Musel. I really enjoyed his class in biology, and so I've always had natural resources, and we studied fish, and we did some dissection stuff, and he was I think a good teacher related to having us understand organs and parts and all those. I'm sure that's a little tough to keep people on the straight and narrow when they're dissecting a frog or goofing around with something like that. But I was unfortunately not like some of my siblings. I wasn't a real great student, so I was your classic B student, so I just get in, get out, and try not to make too much attention to myself. And if I could ever score an A every now and then, I'd be like, sweet. But usually academics wasn't first on my mind. It was all the other fun stuff that we could do at school. But, I think the other big difference is, and, going back in history, is just the lack of technology. And, the school was just, it was no air conditioning. Yeah. And basically it was, you got in there. They had an intercom system. They had a paper system for attendance that would go around. Okay. And so you had to collect those. I'm sure you remember that as part of the administration. And keep people in and out. You had these cards. You had this absentee book that every student had. And then you take that absentee book and you get a permission to move stuff. And there just wasn't the automation that you're familiar with today. I don't even know when they got computers in the office.
Yeah, I was at that point still there when that happened, and I remember I was in charge of putting in the backbone of the internet wires going through. Well, the problem was when they built West Dubuque High School, they had very nice, beautiful design with these stupid beams.
I
had to drill through it.
Every beam, which was probably like 18 inches, maybe 24 inches wide.
To run the wires to the building, to the classroom. So anyway, that was a problem.
So high school was good through those. And I remember a lot of the extracurricular activities. But the same teachers, it was my experience, at least my memory, is like you wouldn't get any new teachers. It'd be the same group of people. And sometimes, you know, you knew that they taught, you know, algebra, for example, but, you know, it wasn't like a new algebra teacher would come in every year. It was very consistent and stable. And I think that from, you know, from an education vantage point and a familiarity, that makes you feel comfortable. Because you might not have had that teacher, but you'd see them in the hallway. Yeah. And then you could talk to other people. And I had a lot of siblings, so they kind of know the different types of, you know, classes that you take. And so when I went to high school, I had, when I was a freshman, we would have had, I would have three other siblings, two other siblings that were there. And so Sally and John. And so maybe just a cute story, our freshman year. So we had this idea of skipping out of school. And so, and we were supposed, mom and dad were gone or something. So we were supposed to meet at my house. And, but my friend Dennis Kane and Ken Foster, they went down to the high school first. And so then they called me on the telephone. We had one telephone out in the hallway, remember, you could use the payphone. And you put your quarter in there, and they called my house, and I picked them. I said, where are you guys? Like, we're at high school. Are you stupid? I thought we were skipping out of school today. Get over here. And they were like, okay. So then they kind of snuck out and walked across town to my house, but they went to school first. So somebody's like, hey, where's Ken and Dennis? So somebody's locked off in the hallway. And so the next thing you know, we've got I shouldn't say this, but Twinkie Knudsen, I think was his nickname. So this was not Harold Knudsen, but the other Knudsen. To make it more challenging, we had two Knudsens that were principal and assistant principal along with you. And so he eventually, next thing we know, we see a school car and they're driving up our driveway. I'm like, oh, geez, this is going to be bad. And so then we got busted for skipping out of school. You know, obviously it wasn't very well planned. Thank God we weren't into bank robbery, because that wouldn't have ended well either. But so we got suspension, and Harold Knudsen yelled at us, and they brought our parents in. And
oh, yeah.
That was my lesson in my freshman year. So I think that was the last time I got caught skipping school. Bob. The other thing with the high schools is that we didn't have any facilities to even feed the kids. So, like, for sure, our freshman, sophomore year, by the whole time, the cafeteria couldn't support all the students.
Yeah.
If all the students would go there, or if it was a pizza day or a good day, the line would be really long, and there'd be no place to sit. So we all go over to the Bobcat.
Yep.
And I, you know, a lot of times I didn't go to the Bobcat to eat. I went over there to eat first at the cafeteria, wait in line, and then we'd go over there to get some candy. And then some of the students would go over there to smoke. And so it's kind of a weird sensation. And so some of the kids that smoked in high school, they weren't supposed to, but the second they got out of the door into the parking lot, they would be lighting a cigarette, and then they would be smoking. And you go over to the Bobcat, and the whole thing was just full of smoke. And people would be eating, like, pound of French fries, and we'd be playing pinball. And I was a sugar fiend, so I'd be getting candy. I'd be getting hot tamales and M&Ms. And we'd be playing video games, Asteroids, and these football games, and pinball, Playboy pinball machine.
Well, you only had so many minutes there.
I don't know. It seemed like we had, like, an hour and a half. But, you know, for a kid when you're 14, 15, you know, 16, if you can get 5 minutes away to goof around, you love it. So, yeah, we would always be active. So we'd go there. And then was it Mr. McDermott, the McDermott guy who ran?
McDermott, yeah.
And so he'd be like, first period lunch is over. You better hit the road. We're going to make class. And then we'd all, like, dash out. And you'd run as fast as you could. I remember I had Mrs. Deneve for French,
yeah,
right after lunch. And so then we'd get in her room, and we just get done, we'd run across, kind of hyper, we'd have a big meal in her belly, and her room was like 85 degrees. And sometimes I think she had candles, and she taught French, and she wanted this atmosphere. And she'd be talking French to us, and I would, my eyes would glaze over and be like, I couldn't handle it because it was so warm. And to this day, bonjour is the only thing I remember. And I think that's either hello or goodbye.
Yeah.
But she was fun, but that was the portables again. And then, it was just, you know, good old fun. We'd run the hallways, and we weren't supposed to. I'm sure you'd yell at us to go get lunch. But for us, that was a big deal. And the band, I was in the band my freshman year, and we kind of got kicked out. And the band was just phenomenal. I was only in a short time with my friends, but they would be 200 strong, and they would go out and march during lunch.
Yep.
And that's just, I think that's a great thing. One, you're doing exercise. Two, it's creative. You got to exercise your mind to play. And then it's just getting out in the fresh air, in the middle of learning, I think is tremendous. So I assume they don't do that as much. You know, closed campus, too difficult, too hot, too cold, you know, worried about liability. But the band would, without any escorts, they just march on the street.
In the street, yeah.
I mean, sleepy little town, people would figure out, they'd wait, they'd go around them, they, you know.
So you took a few band trips?
Actually, a few local band trips. I remember we went down to, like, Maquoketa and that my freshman year. And so I wasn't, I never got to sophomore where we traveled much.
Okay.
But I know that was a big part of a lot of my other classmates. They loved doing that. The other things, I loved history. And I thought Mr. Coffey and Mr. Deliri were excellent teachers in history. And so that was a few classes I got an A in. I loved it. And so it was a lot of fun. And they made it creative. And so they allowed us to do, you know, dancing related to the 20s. And then during the Indian period, I made this through Jack Hill, had some of these arrowheads. And I brought his arrowhead collection in. And then I made this tomahawk on one of these big stones. He said it was a tomahawk. And then somebody brought a buffalo in. Whoever owned the buffalo was bought by Marty Kennedy. So I'm trying to think that somebody knew him, and Marty Kennedy trailered this big buffalo in there, and we go look at this buffalo, and I'm thinking, wow. And you know, just bring it to school. I'm just kidding. I mean, I don't think they allow you to bring buffaloes to school anymore, do they?
Not only that, but you remember when they would bring guns into school. Those history classes.
Wouldn't surprise me, yeah. I mean, it's either laying out.
I mean, that wouldn't happen anymore.
No, no. Well, speaking of that, so we were in the, you probably remember the high school, and so we had all the portables out there, and so imagine the high school today, smaller, and then just all the way around is these portables, white portables, one after another, and kind of created this perimeter. And one of the classrooms was in a portable, and I believe it was my Rose Birkin, was my first cousin, and she was teaching in the class, and I forget who was the other portable class, and there was this raccoon that was running around, and I guess it was like acting funny, and it was in between the portables.
They called the cop,
and so small town Barney Sheriff, you know, I forget his name, we called
him Dan Reynolds.
So I feel bad for Dan. It was probably a tough scenario, but it was his bad day. So anyway, this raccoon is acting rabid, so he pulls out his sidearm, and he's going to take this raccoon out, but it's, like, right next to the portable, and there's kids, like, looking out the window, because, like, you know, there's cops there. He, like, bah, 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 bah. Rifles, 5 or 6 shots. I don't even know if he hits the damn critter, but he hits the portables.
Well, Allie was inside the portable.
Allie was in there. And so you're getting live fire hitting on the portables.
Taking fire
over this raccoon.
See, I think what happened was that those shots would ricochet off the blacktop. And then they go.
Oh, geez. And so, you know, most of us were from rural areas, even small towns, you have raccoons running around. I was like, we didn't care, raccoon. You know, you go out there and you hit it with a baseball bat or leave it alone. But he tries to take live fire. And, oh, God. So that was the hit of the school. They're like, you know, I think one of the Stager boys. Was a great cartoonist, and he drew this cartoon of you know, the students and that, and the cop, and then the raccoon was like running around hiding behind a tree. He's like, is anyone damaged? There's like students and portables shot up. But you know, that was kind of weird. And then you know, so there's a few of those fun times that we just had in high school.
Now you have to recreate the shot.
Oh, yeah. So rolling forward, appreciate you with my one standing moment. And so basketball was good. And so maybe I'll first give credit to the team ahead of us. So when I was a junior and on the senior team, so that varsity team won conference, and led by some of those players I mentioned, Dennis Bradley, and certainly Doug Lampe, and you know, a whole group of really good players there. Al Hartman was a point guard.
Yeah.
And they won conference, and they won their league. They won their conference every year. I remember they were so jacked up. I remember we clinched it in Cascade, and that was against one of the Greg McDermott teams, I believe, and they were real good. We clinched it in Cascade, and they were just jacked up, and I guaranteed that they won every conference they had. And so they were a really good team. We had our moments, our team. And Western Dubuque always had trouble getting out of districts. We'd either face Waller usually in the districts, and Waller was a powerhouse and would beat us. And so we had first round with Hempstead, And I think we had opposite records.
Game at Waller?
I think it was at Waller.
Yes,
and it was. And we were 6-16 maybe, or a little less than that, and they were 16-6. And they had beaten Waller that year, and they had Bob Derwin was an all-state player, he's an excellent athlete, and Mark Gassman, Russ Ruggie, and a few other good players on that team. And we were, I think, underachievers. So long story short, we got in there and the district play, and we got all jacked up, and we held them real good the first half. We were down. Jerry Closerman played a tremendous game. I think he had a double-double. He scored like 21 points and had 12 rebounds. And Bob Nauman never turned the ball over. And in the end, we were down by 1 point. And George Bauer and Finley drew up a plan. And I was in the game, and they were like, I was gonna take the ball, I was gonna throw the ball out of bounds, and we're gonna throw it to Connery at half court to try to get, because we were bad ball handlers, and we thought they were gonna press the heck out of us because there were only like 6-8 seconds left, and I was supposed to throw the ball to half court, and I was gonna run up both sides, they were gonna try to hit us, and then we're gonna try to get the shot. They're back. And I'm like, oh, goodness, they're back. And so Bob, I'm there from the bottom, and said, well, we better not throw it to half court. They're back already. And so I get to Bob, and we run down there, and we bring the ball down, and he whips it to me on the other end. And I know that we only have a few seconds left. I take 2 or 3 dribbles. There's one to go on my face, but I better let this baby go. And it wasn't too far over, about 18-footer off the left side, and it clanks in, and the time expires, and we win the game. And so that was my only 2 points of the game.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I'd like to tell people I had 30 that game, but that was my only 2 points. Give credit where credit's due. I'm sure, you know, Connery had a solid game. Stefan had a solid game, and Jared Klosterman was the leading scorer. Bob Nauman played a great floor game for us. But, I got some of the credit, and I got the shot that went in. I'd actually hit 2 others just before that, and so I was kind of in a zone. So we had a game at Bellevue, and my grandma was down there, and they also had a good record. They had some tall junk brothers, 6'5", 6", and they were good players. And then I hit a shot at the close to the end of the time for that game too, and we won that one. And then the other shot I remember. So George Maurer, now him and I and the Wickhams didn't get along all the time, but. So he goes, senior night, he basically says, day before senior night, we're going to do 1 quarter, juniors versus seniors. If the juniors win, you guys are all benched. I was like, well, that's inspiring. And I don't know where that came from. And so, anyway, 1 quarter, yeah. So and they had a few good teams, like Brad Ryan and another Norman kid. They were fine, you know. And so, anyway, we're down like 2. And this was the first year like of the 3-point line. We're down like 2, and there's like 5-6 seconds left to go. And I'm like, holy shit. And so I hit the ball in the 3-point range. I hit it, switch, and we split. And Maurer goes, he didn't say good shot. He goes, I would have benched you if you would have missed that. And I was like, yeah. I was like, okay. So anyway, so those were a few good shots we had. But we had a good fun team. And you know, I'll give Roll that credit for, and then we lost to Waller. We played a tough game. I think we lost to him by 6 or 8 points. We were ahead a couple times in the game, but they were just tough. They had Plonky, who was a D1 guy,
yeah.
And a few other good Schmidt kid, which he's from our neck of the woods. Yeah. He would have been a Bobcat. He was a sharpshooter. Tom Schmidt could yeah. shoot like there's no tomorrow. That's you know, one of the things Western Dubuque didn't get all the great good athletes. A lot of them went to Waller, and that was true with Thunder Hills as well. And so, you know, it's open enrollment with that. But It's all changed now. So it's it's shifted a little bit. And you know, kudos then to my dad and his team with 27-0, and you know, end up winning the state title. The first time the boys ever went to state. We didn't, class just below us went to state in football, but we had trouble getting to state in our class like a lot of them did. It was a super accomplishment, but later on, Shelley Barton and some of their teams won yeah. state, and the basketball team won state.
Yeah, I thought your dad didn't take that job.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
good work.
Well, because Jeff was an inexperienced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Coach Frick was relatively young, just coming off a.
I knew we needed some stability, and so I called him and I proposed this, and he didn't know. And I got to talk to Brenda and see what she says, and anyway, I think it took about two more calls before.
Did you tell him these kids got talent, Dad?
that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, that was a good recruiting call because 27-0 was good, and they won a few other conference titles as well when he was there.
I don't think, in my opinion, we could have beat the next class up at the tournament, state tournament. We were better than. I've never seen a more dominant defensive team than we had with that size. It was incredible. But anyway,
yeah. So we did good, and then that was when I don't know if they were in the Big Ten or the WALMAC then. So those are the two conferences that WD's. Those are the only two that we've been in all the whole time.
Pretty much.
They've been in the WALMAC.
Back there were some years we weren't in any conference.
Okay.
But
now they'll be in the Mississippi Valley, which is going to be very tough. So it'd be good grown up experience for Western Dubuque. The other memorable part for me was part of the drama. I was in place. So that's another thing, kind of, everybody did everything. And I wasn't the kid that went to state and speech and all this stuff. I was busy on athletics and goofing around. And so then I was always in the place. And then my brother John had to lead a play in Little Abner with Gladys Wrestler as the director. And then she cast me in the leading role of Oklahoma. And so that was fun. Great memory for me. Just to be up there. One, you're in the gym again, so it's comfortable in the gym, but on the stage. And it was just real, real good synergy that we had related to my classmates. We had a few cliques, and there was sometimes he'd like this, the jocks or the cool kids versus Jeff Pape and the farm kids. I see Jeff and talk to him every now and then. He had this big blue truck with the big monster tires on it. Him and his other guys, they called the Chain Gang, and they had these little chains that they'd wear on their wallets. That was the Chain Gang. And so, I don't think it ever came to real big bad blows or anything, mostly the kids got along. We respect the kids from the farming community. They worked hard. They still, some of them only got to choose one sport because they had to help with the farm. Yeah. I know Jared Closeman was like that for a long time. Then he went out for football, playing football in college. Lloyd Hunt was another good teammate of mine in cross country and ran a great cross country race, made it to state and ended up running cross country in college. And those are opportunities that Western Dubuque and the coaches, Coach Hermie was a great coach, fun as can be and just a good motivator. And that allowed those guys to go to college through athletics and through real good coaching and good mentoring as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you had some tremendous memories, Jay. I'm impressed. I mean, this is a great interview.
It's been all downhill from then, Bob, so that was my key.
It's been great. I appreciate all of your comments. And
well, I appreciate you doing this. And